Now, it's a manic world out there, and it can be tiring. We're subject to advertising and agenda, 24-hour news cycles. It's mentally draining, but it's also equally important to stay involved, I would think. Now, if you're unaware at the moment, President Donald Trump of the US of A is currently campaigning for a second term in the White House. He's got a little bit of momentum going and seemingly reflective of the West's current preference for conservative governance in a lot of its powers. We're joined now by Brendan O'Connor. He's an associate professor of American politics at the United States Studies Center here in Sydney. The aim of that organization is to increase the understanding of the Aus-American relationship. And like I said, it is part of the University of Sydney. Brendan, are you there?
Good to talk with you.
Yeah, good to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us here. I should ask just first and foremost, very, very briefly, to a layman like myself, can you explain just the major differences between kind of Australian and American politics and leadership campaigns, and how does the race look currently?
Well, the main difference is that the US has an elected president. That president is usually from one of the two parties in American history, the Democrats or the Republicans, and those parties have their own primary systems, which are open sort of elections as well. We've been going through that with Bernie Sanders, Biden, Warren, all of these other characters have dropped out of the race over the last couple of months. So that makes the system, I think, probably more suited for sort of modern media coverage, because you've got individuals rather than parties that you're voting for. And it's also sort of got this heavy emphasis on rallies, debates, campaigning, more sort of individualized approaches to how people get elected. So it makes it a spectacle. There's a lot at stake. Right. The US has a lot of influence over the rest of the world. So it's not surprising that a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with people like Bernie Sanders, who may not, you know, go on to be a candidate, but they hear a lot about them for a year.
Yes.
In the lead up to any election.
So it's funny that you say it's almost reflective of reality TV sometimes, and it is changed. And I wanted to ask, obviously, kind of the Australian press or the Australian media picks up a very kind of almost absurdist representation of Trump. I want to ask, is it genuinely kind of reflective of what he is as a president, or is it more that's just what we get filtered down through to us? Or is it even that, is there something about the Australian sensibilities that someone like Donald Trump just doesn't seem to kind of relate to? Obviously, there are people in Australia that would get it, but is it a matter of that, Australian sensibilities?
Well, it's all of those things, but Trump is covered like a sort of reality television show in the United States as well. I mean, one of the big advantages that Trump had was that he wasn't in some ways held to account by the American media effectively, and certainly the global media treated him in some regards as a bit of a joke, as a bit of a kind of cartoon character.
Right.
And it became really serious once he got elected. It was a sense of, okay, this is a bit of a fool's errand. He's never going to win. He's just making a sort of name for himself. He wants to sell his brand and his hotels and his name, and that's what Donald Trump's always been about. But obviously, when he won the election and he came in with some very xenophobic policies on the border, on immigrants from the Middle East, on from predominantly Muslim countries, on setting up trade barriers and the like, people said, well, oh God, we've got to start taking this seriously rather than a joke. So that was, I think, one of the features, not just in Australia, that was a feature probably for a lot of American voters and for the American public in general. Now, he's not, clearly as popular in Australia or anywhere really outside of the US as he is in the US. He's deeply unpopular with about half the population in the US, probably loathed more than any politician I can ever think of. But there is a loyal base that people who are Republicans in the United States have voted for Trump in an opinion polls, showing that they would vote for Trump again. So it's an incredibly divided electorate. It's kind of, love him or loathe him kind of, or stick with him or loathe him kind of president, it would be best to describe Trump as, and very few people in the middle. I mean, there's very few people, I think, at this stage who say, well, I'm not so sure about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I haven't really made up my mind, what he's like.
It does seem to be like that. And there is that rhetoric, isn't there, where it's kind of, like you said, people that vote Republican, vote Republican. They're sold on it, such and such of that. And while that is kind of reflected in Australia sometimes with, no, I vote Liberal or I vote Labor or I do this or I do that, it seems that there's that common rhetoric, like I was going to say, that the left seems to always be butting heads with the left as to what is kind of the agendas of the left in kind of whatever capacity it might be, or whatever context it might be, I should say, whereas the right seems to stay true. In saying that, the Democratic Party over there, the two most viable candidates seemingly couldn't be less alike in Biden and Sanders. What are their chances realistically as a party?
Well, at the moment, it looks like Joe Biden is going to be the candidate for the Democratic Party. He's got a good lead in the primary numbers, but, you know, we're in unprecedented times. We're in very strange times. It's going to be hard for people to vote. Certainly going to be discouraging for older people to come out to vote. The candidates themselves put themselves at risk by campaigning. Mm. So this is, you know, this is just a time not to make too many predictions, I would have thought.
Right.
A time to sort of be cautious about making predictions. But in the likelihood that Biden does face off against Trump at the end of the year, you've got, you know, a deeply divided country. As you said before, Americans didn't used to be this partisan, in the sense of people who were Democrats sometimes voted for candidates like Reagan, who were Republicans, and sometimes Republicans voted for Johnson or Kennedy, who were Democrats. But that's occurring less. There's a much hardening of sort of people's loyalty, and they're not switching about thinking, oh, that guy seems like a decent fellow, or hopefully a woman in the future would be great to have, and Republican women might vote for Hillary Clinton. That didn't happen.
Right.
So what we've, you know, got is this prospect of a very close election, no matter who the Democrats choose. And Trump, remarkably, I think for many of us, having a chance of being re-elected. I mean, given his record of incompetence and his record of chaos in the White House, this current crisis which everyone is facing with the coronavirus, you know, you couldn't pick a more ill-suited person to be leading one of the world's, you know, most important nations in fighting this crisis than Donald Trump. You know, someone drawn to conspiracy theories, not particularly interested in anyone else's opinion, let alone an expert's opinion. So we're in a difficult and unfortunate circumstance. But on the same hand, there is a good chance this man would get re-elected, which, as I said, is a remarkable situation.
It is remarkable. It's crazy to think. I remember sitting what is now 4 years ago and kind of watching it all unfold. And I don't think at the time I could appreciate kind of what was actually going on, and I had to go off to work before it it was definitely confirmed one way or the other. But I remember I was sitting down with a sandwich, and I couldn't even finish the sandwich because I was thinking, oh my God, I actually can't believe it. You know, it makes your stomach turn. I should ask, you did mention that Biden seems to have the lead, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's slightly more centrist, yes?
Yes, definitely. I mean, Biden very much comes from what might be called the establishment wing of the Democratic Party, vice president under President Obama, which Biden has made a lot of, and has kind of been one of the centerpieces of his campaign, is to say, well, if you liked Obama, if you miss Obama, you know, I'm the next best thing because I was his vice president. And that's led to him having a lot of support of African Americans, has been really important in the Democratic primaries, particularly in the South, where he did very, very well on Super Tuesday. So Biden represents, I think, a back to what we would have seen with Bill Clinton, with Barack Obama, a fairly moderate set of policies, socially fairly progressive, but economically, I think, fairly moderate. With Bernie Sanders, we've got the first really popular socialist politician in American politics.
Is he socialist? Because it seems that he describes
himself as a democratic socialist. That's his own label that he likes to use. I'd probably call him a social democrat if he was a European politician. But he hasn't shied away from that label, and he's made the claim that socialism is a good thing, that sort of bridled capitalism is a terrible thing. And that's been a challenge in America, but he is remarkably popular for the positions he holds. Historically, they've been positions that have been demonized in American politics and not popular at all, or at least hard to get support for. And he's been a brave candidate in this regard to label himself these things and run on things like universal medical coverage. Mm-hmm. He talked about 10 million homes being built for the homeless and poor. He's talked about free university study for everyone in America. So these are big departures from what we're used to in American politics.
When you lay those things all out, kind of objectively, they sound like good things. Universal anything, right? And I understand it's within kind of what has historically been the beacon of a capitalist economy in the US, but why is socialism such a dirty word? We see it. We saw it in the UK with Corbyn. It seems to be a thorn in the side. What is so dirty about the term socialist or socialism?
Well, historically associated with the rise of the Soviet Union, with the Cold War, it was seen as, you know, that was America's arch enemy in the world, that America was the sort of beacon, as you say, of capitalism and democracy. Mm-hmm. And the Soviet Union, which wanted to conquer, in America's eyes, all of Europe, was this, you know, Red Scare. Now, that played out in American politics, that anyone who was mildly sympathetic to communism, even as a teenager, was scarred, that anyone who wanted to negotiate with the Soviet Union or take a more sort of conciliatory line was often called soft and deluded. And that has had a long impact. Not just in the Cold War period, but in the post-Cold War period, politicians in the 1990s and early 2000s were still scared by that history.
Right.
Sanders, though, shows a bit of a break from that history in saying, well, a lot of young people, that history doesn't make sense anymore. It's irrelevant to their lives. And so it's led to this generational divide where he's very popular amongst younger Americans, particularly under 25, but even under 30, where he's not popular. With this group of people over 50 who have memories of the Cold War and have an instinctive kind of response that the label socialism is too radical for American politics and it will get him nowhere, and he could potentially lose because of that label, which Trump, being an older man as well, would bring out a lot in the election campaign.
Right, that makes sense. Just very quickly, because we do need to move on, why is it so important to understand kind of that Aus-American relationship, what you deal with, the discipline that you deal with on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it's a country that just affects us so much. I mean, the Americans, you know, travel here, their arms come here, their economy comes here. So I think, like anything in politics, things that are hugely impactful, like global warming, it's sensible for us all to be informed about it rather than to be angry about it, and hopefully when we're informed we can have an opinion on it, we can voice that opinion to our own government, maybe vote in ways that can change policy. So all of us who teach at universities and study at universities like to believe that more information leads to better decisions, and that's I think crucial about the United States, because it is a country that you might have reservations about, quite rightly at the moment. But being informed about your reservations and your concerns and your interests, I think, is always a lot better than having a sense of just frustration and worry about a country when you maybe don't study it as deeply or haven't had a chance to look at it as much as might be useful.
Right. I should actually just ask this then. What tangible, realistic effect might this kind of election on the way that it looks like it's going and kind of the modern or the current, landscape of global politics, what might it have on Australia? Significantly Australia, and then I guess the West and the globe, like the main examples, if you could really narrow it down to something.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that I'm very concerned about with the re-election of Donald Trump is 4 more years of the planet warming with no one in the White House taking global warming that seriously. Mm-hmm. You've got a president who's not reacted to see it as a crisis or a threat. He's underplayed global warming, and I don't think we can afford in Australia or globally or in America, I don't think we can afford 4 more years of that. So that would be tragic. One of the other things that is sort of unfortunate here and in the US is that facts and information and experts have been undermined by Trump. This is someone who was a conspiracy theorist. He believed, he made the false claim that Obama was born in Kenya, and yeah, he wrote that in some ways to publicity. I was reading today that when the Ebola virus came out 6 years ago in Africa, and there were some Americans who went over and sort of bravely helped out, and they caught Ebola and they brought back to America and treated effectively and cured, Trump beat this up and said, well, these people should never have been allowed back into America, that you couldn't have a bowler in America, and just ill-informed scaremongering tactics. Something like that should disqualify you, hopefully, from running for, you know, local mayoral office or dog catcher.
Very scary. I'm very sorry, Brendan, but we do have to move on. It was a very informative chat. I really appreciate you coming on. Have a good day and all the best going forward. It's pretty scary at the moment in Sydney and Australia. So, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
See you, Brendan. That was Brendan O'Connor. He's Associate Professor in American Politics at the University of Sydney.